B-Pod Studios.
Back. Now, sports talk while you're on the clock. This is Zolak and Bertrand.
I'm going to slap you because you fake it.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
There was one item left over in the box. I bet this happens in the Zolak household every Christmas. Boxes get thrown away with items left in them. This was from the Amanda box. Is this correct?
Correct. Correct Amanda.
There was one more item in there that you missed.
It's a punctured what?
It's not punctured. It's a coin from the dedication on October 4th of 2002 of the Leonard P. Zakim Bunker Hill Bridge.
I love it.
So I love it. This can be really flipped at the next Super Bowl, where the bridge, the Leonard P. Zakim Bunker Hill Bridge, this would be heads. This side would be tails, gentlemen. Who's going to call it in the air?
Heads.
Heads. Heads it is.
I was there that day.
Receiver defer.
We want to go this way.
So you're going to kick. Steam Alex 2. Defer to the second half.
No, wait.
Thanks, man. Duh.
We want to kick off in the second half. What? What are you doing? All right, very good. Amanda, those are three. So many good items today. The golf balls, by the way, that's the logo for Tatnik Country Club. Awesome. Good
nice.
Stuff. Thank
good
you
stuff.
To Tim and Amanda for the boxes today. So the NHL.
Yeah.
Is obviously going through a much different season, as all these sports are right now. And cases have been made for changing the NHL playoffs permanently based on what we're seeing here. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN has some notions as to how things should change going forward. All right. And T-Bone did a good job of kind of encapsulating all this, right?
Did he?
Yes. Number one, because it's very long column, and he presents his points much more eloquently, but for the sake of time, I'm just going to give them to you in bullet points. The NHL should expand the playoffs beyond 16 teams. Yes or no?
No.
That's what I say.
Yeah.
I think less is not always more, but when you've got something that seems to work and the amount of teams that you have right now, I'm okay with it. T-Bone, more than 16?
No.
No. Michael Bryan, more than 16 teams in the NHL playoffs?
No. Because in a ideal year, everything's going to be equal. All things equal, right?
Yes. Yes.
That's the whole thing about the
Nick.
See, this is we've seen it through two games. Like this is everything's almost asked backwards.
More
this
than,
has neutralized everybody.
Right. More than 16 teams in the NHL playoffs or no? Down. Okay. All right.
He gets a vote?
Sure.
Okay.
He almost died.
He is full time.
And he almost died. Point. So like a heart thing or something. Did you send a card or anything? Did you call him? Did you check in on him when he was going through all
called
that?
You. Called him multiple times.
Did I call you?
Probably not.
No.
I care.
The NHL should bring back the round robin and qualification round. So we're seeing this right now. The season ends. You know who's who in terms of best records, but you're going to do a qualification round-robin tournament anyway. I say no. I don't hate what's going on right now, but I still say no. T-Bone?
No.
Hell no.
Mike?
No.
Nick? Nick says no.
You see where this is heading, right?
What?
No, just see the reaction. It's just it's idiocy. Is what it is.
Well, some of these things have ended up being okay in terms of how they play the 7-inning doubleheaders for baseball.
Well, this is baseball. Then we're talking about a game that has regressed and slowed down to where it's become problematic and you're losing people on it.
Yeah,
you're not losing people.
Not everything that is going to happen in this, you know, pandemic season is going to be bad. Okay. The NHL should go to 5-game series in the first round of the playoffs.
I say yes. Yes.
T-Bone.
I say no.
Why?
Why? Because he's You know why? You know why he says no? Because he's a Bruins fan. And we're all Bruins fans. And he knows that one less opportunity for them to advance could screw them over. and they could get popped, as opposed to maybe if the series gets extended, they get their heads out of their ass and start playing like they're capable of playing.
The great thing about the NHL playoffs is the grind. You're going to lop games off of that?
Baseball. I love the fact that baseball, you know, the first round, it's not seven-game series.
I would give up a potential of, and look, you go from a best of seven to a best of five, you might only be giving up a game, right? Yeah. Or two. At the most, it's going to be two. So it doesn't change things all that much, okay?
Celtics Bucks, if you play five times between the two, and if the Bucks beat you three of those five times, I think they deserve to say that they're the better team. If you can beat a team three out of five times, you're the better team. If the Chiefs play the Patriots and the Chiefs beat the Patriots three out of five times they would play, I would say, yes, the Chiefs are the better football team. If you play the Washington Capitals five times and you kick their ass three of them, you're the better team.
I mean,
five's a pretty damn good sampling.
Being up 3-0 in a series, and of course we've seen this. We've seen this from the other side. We've seen it with the Bruins. I mean, I don't want to bring up, you know, bad memories, but you get up 3-0 in a best of seven. Haven't you established that, you know, you're in all likelihood the better team in this scenario and you deserve to move on? And all of a sudden that closeout game, things get a little weird, and then you've got this critical game. And next thing you know, it's great for the later rounds, but in the first round, I'm okay with a best of five. O'Brien?
I think with best of five, you're going to have a lot of upsets. More upsets than you would in a best of seven series. Mm-hmm. But then you look at last year, and it's not like the NBA. In the NHL, an 8 or 7 seed can take down a number one or number
two. You related to Dave O'Brien?
No.
No. You get a lot of S's with him. Like,
would you
he's
stop
a...
it?
Yeah, a little bit.
See, there's a lot of
he's
upsets.
An S. He's an S.
I got a little S in there, yeah, for sure.
There, I've had that my whole life. A whistle on the S's. You hear it?
See, I have a problem. I have a problem with like Dale or Dell.
Oh, you Del, really?
Or Hill?
Really?
Well, a whale. Like I have that.
Well,
I have that.
Whale.
See, that's where I mean, everybody's yeah, got their
everyone's
own.
Everyone's got something.
Everybody's got their own vocabulary issue.
I think you get upsets in the NHL regardless of whether it's a best of five or best of seven. To me, more upsets, Mike. And it you're right. If you played it out over the course of 10 years, and you might look at the numbers and say, wow, there are more upsets than we were used to before. But if you establish yourself early on in a series, especially in the first round, I don't have a problem with that. Yeah.
I say yes.
Here's
yes.
why I would make the trade-off. You're going to potentially have four fewer games in that opening round. If you're really doing it, you can either sweep a team or you could go, you know, to a full seven.
Right.
You're going to preserve health of these guys for the later rounds when it really matters. You have a better chance of keeping guys healthier longer. That's all. Mm. That's why I would say yes to that. Finally, the NHL should continue to re-bracket after each round.
I don't like that.
See, I don't like that one either. I think winning the regular season should count for something. I truly do. Which
it
is
should.
Why, which
if
is
you're
going
to divide it, if you're going to have East, if you're going to have East versus West,
yeah.
And then you're going to have divisions within the conference,
yeah.
Then what the hell have that all year if you're going to re-bracket things?
Yeah.
What's the purpose of, you know, having teams geographically sectioned off to where it's easier to play those teams more, right? And that's why we do this. You got to have East versus West. Yeah. Like national.
Are you talking about re-bracket or reseeding? Talking about,
I think that's the same thing.
Same,
yeah. Okay, so,
but it'd be like the AFC and NFC in football. Like, no, if you're the number one seed, you're the number one seed. You stay the number one seed.
You stay the number one seed. Correct.
You know, and if you're the suckier ass team and you had to fight to get in as a six, guess what? You're gonna play the best team. We're not re-bracketing things as. Oh, and by the way, if we pop the best team, we don't automatically become the best team, or the two doesn't become the best. Guess what?
Right. Right.
The highest ranked team that's left becomes the best team.
Correct.
Okay. We're not reseeding things. No, I hate that.
I don't like that either. All right. Before we hear from Brian Hoyer coming up here at 11:36, potentially, maybe, hopefully, there was an SI article on quote unquote saving the football season. Because look, I'd be lying if I said I didn't think that it was in jeopardy. just look at everything that's happened over the last 6 months. And, of course, you've got reason to be doubtful that things are going to go off without a hitch. They have a pretty bold theory that they published in terms of how they think they could save the NFL season. We'll tell you what that is and talk about it with you coming up next here. 617-779-0985. Hardy in for Beetle on Zolak and Bertrand.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Something.
You gotta wear your lucky jersey, don't wash the lucky socks,
rub your ball 16 times. Yeah.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now, back to Zolak and Bertrand on Boston's Home for Sports.
You know, I don't know that I'm extremely confident. I respect the challenges that this circumstances has presented to other leagues, and some of which we're witnessing. I think we're all, you know, proceeding with caution and working extremely hard not to become part of that. And, you know, we've got some people in leadership positions, Dr. Sills and other medical professionals that have led the charge for us globally in the NFL. And we're working our tails off to adhere to it and hoping that is enough, coupled with obviously personal decision making that needs to be exhibited continually by our guys throughout the course of this.
Mike Tomlin, God bless him, taking 100 words to say what he could say in five.
Well, he could lose you.
I don't know that I'm extremely confident. You know what another way of saying that is? I'm not. Are you extremely confident that you're going to be able to finish this season? I don't know that I am extremely. No. Which is not a bad thing. He's being honest. I don't know that this SI article here from Mitch Goldich.
Mitch
is honest when it says it is a modest proposal to save the 2020 NFL season. Mm-hmm. I suppose what they could be saying in the headline here is that you need to take it down a notch, NFL. You, though, are a water carrier, flag waver, trumpeter for the NFL as much
damn
as anyone
right.
I know. We're going to do it.
I'm going to play ball. That's what people do.
They're saying maybe a bit of modesty might actually do you some good at this time, because he's saying, you know what you could do? If you want to have a quote-unquote full season, cut the schedule in half. Each team plays 8 games. Chop the schedule in half. Beyond limiting the number of times different teams are coming into contact with each other, each team gets to play all its games 2 weeks apart. He says the MLB season has been knocked out by the fact that they're playing so frequently. It's hard to handle the false positives and the lagging test results. The NFL can have the luxury of more spaced out games this way, which they do anyway. You go every other week. 6 division games, 2 other intra-conference matchups for reasons that he goes on to later. So that's number one, Zoe. Cut the schedule in half. What do you think?
I think that's a little extreme, because I think then you really look into, it's just a, you know what, we're gonna force this year and we're gonna do it half ass.
That is the definition of half ass.
No,
right.
I know,
half.
And I think it doesn't. And this is why guys are opting out, because it doesn't feel right. You know what I mean? That it's already, the whole thing's already foobarred. It is what it is. Like the green, you know, the stuff coming out of Green Bay, there's gonna be no fans at Lambeau Field. I did a Zoom call last night locally with some people, like, and one of the questions was, what's your favorite stadium to ever play in? What's your best experience as an NFL player? I'm like, Lambeau Field by far. It's one of the greatest settings in pro football. They will have no fans there this year. Like, right there as a player, we're running out, and it feels like a practice, which should be game day.
That's what they've said at Lambeau, yeah.
Nothing better than NFL game day. The smell, the pomp and circumstance, the lead-up, the night before, the nervous stomach at breakfast. And then you get there, and then warm-ups, and then you run out, and it's like air out of a balloon. Nobody there. Whoa, this is weird. Oh, I have to go out and play at my highest level and concentrate. where other guys feed off that, like the intensity of the crowd. It gets us pumped. It gets us jacked. Pittsburgh, when you play Renegade in the fourth quarter, that place is blacks out and it goes nuts. The towels are cranking and you can't hear yourself think. And it intimidates the other team. That's gone. That whole element. So now we're going to chop it in half. What the hell have you been doing all these months? You've been Zooming, right? You did everything to make everything hands-free. You have disinfectant stations already in your building, which is already starting to affect people. You can't congregate in groups. I can't go sit and eat with my 10 buddies at lunch because that's not normal anymore. Nothing is normal. So in a non-normal world, I'd rather whack it instead of, you know, go to 8 games. Just don't play. Or push it to spring.
As part of this 8-game schedule, he'd say the weeks alternate between AFC and the NFC. So that way we get 8 football games every week, eliminating the bye weeks because you're going to have so much time off in between. He said we'd miss all those wild Sunday slates when there were 7 games going on at once, but it doesn't sound like we're going to be going to sports bars with a bunch of TVs anyway.
Right.
To your first point, so I understand what you're saying. Like, if you're just going to cut it in half, I almost think you would be better served by doing it and getting it over with and saying, okay, we're going to cut the season in half and we're going to be finished by November.
What's the speed to finish by November? I mean, you only play once a week as it is to begin with. It's not like you're playing back to back and we got this, all these travel things. Yeah, I mean, we could maybe redo the schedule to where now, okay, you look at Patriots are the perfect example. Week 2, we're in Seattle. Then week 4, we're in Kansas City. Followed by a setup later in the year to where you're at Chargers, L.A. Chargers, Sunday afternoon, Thursday night game, L.A. Rams out there. Maybe you have to spread those out if you want teams to get back on their plane and go back instead of staying out there. Maybe you could eliminate and tweak the schedule to where you don't have the West Coast trips where teams stay out there.
Yeah.
And take an entire organization, supplant it, and put it out there to where, okay, now you're exposing more people.
But in the quickest of turnarounds, I get it. Like, if you've got, you know, if you've got the Sunday-Thursday thing going on 1 week,
yeah,
and let's say you're a team that just went through what the Lions did with Matthew Stafford, where your quarterback tests positive, and then it turns out he actually doesn't have it because you got a couple of... In a Sunday-to-Thursday scenario, you would be getting your next guy ready, and you would be essentially wasting time getting your backup ready for a game that he didn't have to play. If you were playing every other week, you could come off of that Sunday game, find out that your starting quarterback tests positive the next day, 3 days later find out he's not, and you know what you've lost? Nothing.
Yeah.
No big deal. You know what? See, really weren't going to start game planning this thing and start practicing for our next opponent until Friday or Saturday anyway.
Right.
So what's the, no harm, no foul on this one.
See, and here's the problem too, and at the collegiate level, I know not a lot of people here care about the collegiate game, but I think that is part of the process where the NFL is looking at how are these teams handling, even the big teams, the LSUs that have been infected, the Clemson and that. Now, I know a team that had another guy test positive, was a false positive like Stafford.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, the next day he tested negative and then negative again. And that's a local college football team. So these kids have been sort of in a mini quarantine bubble for over 2 months now, getting ready to play the season. And you're starting to mess with the psyche of the player and a kid, an 18, 19-year-old kid who isn't trained to do this. You know, NFL, that's your job. It's year-round. It's 365. Some of these college kids have a month off in the summer. Then you come back, you get ready August. Well, they've been going at it before the 4th of July, trying to get ready to play. And what they have is the availability and the ability to test multiple times and test rapidly. Like, you get a positive, we got to make sure this kid has it before we take him away and quarantine him for 14 days and get him away from the grouping of people who'd you work out with yesterday. Then we got to quarantine them. So now the fact it's negative, and here's the problem. They said, well, we got all this stuff in Florida now where, or some of these hotbed states where you test positive, these people that wait in lines for hours to get a test in their car and they're camped out sitting on chairs because, you know, we talked about that this week. Oh, it's so easy to get a... No, it's not easy to get a test unless you're sick and you go to a doctor. But you go to one of these sites and all of a sudden, yeah, we swab you. You know what? You're positive. Guess what? You get marked up as a positive. You don't have the ability like a football player at a high-level college program or the NFL or MLB or NBA living in a bubble or the 8,000 tests on the hockey players that have been going on where they've got a 0.0 going on, and credit to them because they have the ability to do it. Normal people in our world don't have the ability to do that right away, to get a quick another test. Can I test again? Then again, the next, the third, the fourth day. And these people are getting chalked up as positives. Are they really positive or are they negative? Is it a false positive?
But this is why...
We don't know what the hell is going on.
This is why going to an eight-game season and having every other week be your schedule would allow you some wiggle room to deal with those false positives and not have to change things dramatically and drastically for your football team every single week. And there are going to be short weeks for these guys. Now, in terms of when they would be played, he says, play every game at night. Because, you know, Florio a couple of months ago said a lot of teams were considering flying to road games, day of game, coming back right away. Which sounds crazy, but that's essentially what you do now for, like, you know, the Buffalo game and the Jets game. How long are you away from home for those games, though, when you're traveling with the team?
Under 24 hours.
Right. I mean, it's you could pull it. It's not ideal.
About 24 hours for a quick local one, yeah.
But he said you play every game at night. You can get on the road, you can fly out in the morning. You're there in plenty of time, and you could go do that. Now,
you have about three anomalies throughout the course of a year where, okay, that's going to be a difficult stretch there, or that's a difficult trip. Boy, the one year we went to Mexico, we went to Denver, stayed out there for an entire week. That was a nightmare season. Still went to the Super Bowl that year, but they handled it well. And sometimes that brings teams together. But this shrunken schedule supports my concern of what I talked about yesterday with you and Beadle in the day before, where what if Mahomes gets it Friday before an away game? Does he get on a plane? Does he get on a bus the next morning at 11 o'clock on a normal travel schedule because you're going to play a team at 1 o'clock on Sunday? See, that's where maybe, okay, we could dodge something here, or we could flex a game. The ability to maybe flex a game to a Sunday night or Saturday. I don't know.
Well,
but I mean, if you're going to talk eight games, then everything's on the table for the ability to switch, pull the old switcheroo to accommodate maybe a false positive on a Friday of your key player.
He goes into extra conference games as being ideal for, you know, geographic reasons, and doing a 16 team playoff with two teams from every division. Look, before we get into that, I just want to say that this is all predicated on, or it seems to be mostly predicated on, that travel is the real evil here. You're trying to eliminate travel. You're trying to cut down on the amount of time spent on the road, in hotels, and the quick turnaround that is necessitated by all that. I would argue that, number one, that implies that you have a perfect understanding of this virus and how it works. I say you are just as you're putting players and the health of the season and the ability to finish the season at risk as much, if not more, by saying to these guys, all right, we got 2 weeks, so you know what that means? We got 3 days off before we got to be back in here, and good luck to you. Where does everybody go? What happens then?
Well, how about this? How many teams have the ability to own their own two planes and have them sit and have nobody else use them but the team?
The air travel, you might be aided this fall in the amount of air travel, and you might be able to reserve
cleaning
planes.
Ability. Yeah.
Yeah, more so than usual.
But then you're bringing in crews of 10 that you don't know where they were all week, normal jobs.
My point is this, though. If you've got, if it's an every other week schedule, you're not going to be practicing every day. The schedule is going to be all thrown up. All these guys are creatures of habit. Fine. We're all creatures of habit, and all our habits have been upended. They could deal with that. I'm saying, I don't expect these guys to be in the facility every single day working like they would be if they were used to playing every week. Teams are going to loosen things up, but we only have eight games. You don't have to be here every day. What happens when everyone leaves the facility? Just based on what's happened with the NBA so far and what's happening with the NHL, the bubble seems to be the way to go, and I can't believe they pulled it off. I can't believe they got these teams into the bubble and that it seems to be working. If you are just going to allow players to go home every night and interact with all the people in their households who have been out all day interacting with other people, I think you're whistling past the graveyard. I think reducing the number of games from 16 to 8 and saying we're only playing every other week and reducing the travel ignores the biggest factor out there. And again, this is just my opinion. I don't claim to have any greater understanding than the guy who wrote the article for Sports Illustrated does, but he seems to think travel is the issue. I seem to think just mixing it up with other people seems to be the issue. And if you're going to be home for 2 weeks at a time, you're going to be mixing it up with a lot of different people.
Sure.
So it's an interesting concept. I don't think it accomplishes what he hopes it will accomplish, which is fewer infections, more chance of pulling off a season. I honestly believe it's going to be accomplished by reducing the amount of interaction each player has with other people around them, and that's up to the league and every team to decide how they're going to do it. Voluntary bubbles or you know, really, really strict protocols for what players have to do. We're late here. I'm sorry, T-Bone. We'll get the update from Mike O'Brien. Hopefully, Brian Hoyer will be on time, and if that happens, we will have that for you coming up next here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.